Thursday, February 4th, 2016, and we are your UFC main event killer leader, copyright Dan Barrero, here on the MMA Torch podcast. I am MMA Torch editor Jamie Pennick, joined once again by MMA Torch senior columnist Sean Ennis. Sean, good to have you back on the show. It's been a little while. Good to chat with you again. As I said, we are your UFC main event killer leader, as we've had some shakeups here in the last week and a half that have brought some changes to February fight cards, most pressing of which is Saturday's UFC Fight Night 82 event, which was supposed to be UFC 196. The name change came after Fabricio Werdum and Cain Velasquez both dropped out last week due to respective injuries, meaning that this was no longer a viable pay-per-view card. First, it was Cain Velasquez pulling out. The UFC tried to book Stipe Miocic in against Werdum, and Werdum essentially said, well, you know, if it was Cain, I'd keep going, but I've got some stuff that I don't feel like fighting through against Miocic. So now we have Johnny Hendricks fighting Stephen Wonderboy Thompson in the main event on Fox Sports 1. Sean, we'll talk about UFC on Fox 18 and maybe the Bellator results from Friday night, and we've got some other stuff to hit as well, but really with this card 2 days away now, I want to talk about the changes that have been made and the UFC's decision here to downgrade to Fox Sports 1, as well as how this will affect the pay-per-view schedule going forward. So we've got a few things to take apart here with UFC Fight Night 82, which is the new designation for this event. First off, when you first saw, you know, Cain Velasquez got hurt last week, and then through the Miocic booking to Fabricio Werdum, how were you reacting to the UFC's decision-making on this front? Because we went from having a rematch that wasn't necessary for the UFC's annual Super Bowl weekend event to a replacement fight that worked but wasn't necessarily the great on short notice, to them actually renaming a card and taking it off of pay-per-view, which is an unprecedented move on their part. So just kind of go through your the way that you saw all of this playing down playing out last week for the changes for Saturday night.
I actually thought it was pretty much the right decisions all the way around. You know, Miocic getting a shot on short notice obviously isn't ideal for him, and apparently wasn't ideal for Werdum either, since he pulled out after that happened. But, you know, he was the right guy to put in there if you're going to do that. And then when Werdum pulled out, the right move again was to pull the card from pay-per-view and put it on TV. You know, obviously it was a night that was available for Fox Sports 1, like most nights are, and it was the right move to do it. So, you know, as far as the renumbering, you know, I think that probably opens up the possibility of having another event, you know, between I guess probably between the old 198 and 199, right? Probably in like May or June or something like that. So I imagine they'll probably stick another event in there somewhere. So they're probably not shedding too many tears over this. And I'm glad that they chose to go this route rather than just scrapping UFC 197 and calling Fabricio Werdum a sport killer.
Well, and here's how we're going to wrap up, how it's all going to tie together, because you're right. They were initially going to skip a month on pay-per-view leading into UFC 200, because they set the date for UFC 200 as July 9th. And they already had needed to skip a month to make it UFC 200 for that July date. Historically, they've done a Memorial Day weekend show. They were not going to do that this year and instead skip May entirely and have an event in early June. And it seems that instead of putting something on Memorial Day to replace this, I don't know if you saw the story this week, but Fabricio Werdum, Stipe Miocic is now expected to headline the May 14th event in Brazil, originally slated as a fight night card headlined by Vitor Belfort versus Ronaldo Jacare Souza. Now that is apparently going to be UFC 198. So
yeah, I did see that now that you mentioned it. Yes, I remember that now.
So what we have is UFC 196, March 5th, with Conor McGregor, Rafael Dos Anjos, Holly Holm, Misha Tate. UFC 197, sometime in April, likely April 23rd, which is the date they had scheduled for Madison Square Garden, with Daniel Cormier taking on Jon Jones for a second time. UFC 198 then in May. UFC 199 featuring the Luke Rockhold, Chris Weidman rematch. and probably another title fight, which might be either Demetrius Johnson's next fight if he doesn't fight earlier, which I think DJ Henry Cejudo might be under Jon Jones Cormier in April. And I think 199 might then feature TJ Dillashaw, Uriah Faber 3. Those are the...
You mean Dominic Cruz?
That's what I meant. Dominic Cruz. Freudian slip, because TJ won that fight. Anyway.
Yes.
How do you think that lines up for the UFC? Because really, honestly, by just circumventing February and still having the heavyweight title fight then in May, they haven't really lost anything. They've just traded one event number for another here, and still set themselves up for some significant fights in July. But I'm curious to see what they can put together for 200, because right now, missing the Holly Holm Ronda Rousey rematch, I'm not sure how this comes close to biggest event ever, when Conor McGregor fighting Rafael Dos Anjos is pretty damn big in March.
Yeah, it brings it back to, I think we talked about it last time we were together. It makes me wonder if GSP is on the horizon, if GSP Anderson Silva might be on the horizon, if he gets, you know, if the Mike Bisping fight goes well. You know, I have to wonder if there's some kind of special attraction like that lined up for 200, or if they're also counting on, you know, if it's GSP plus, they're counting on Conor McGregor, maybe McGregor, Frankie Edgar, something like that. You know, I have to think that they are hoping McGregor comes out of this fight with Dos Anjos relatively unscathed so that he can fight again in July. I don't know that that's a given, but... you know, I have to think that they've got some kind of special attraction like GSP lined up, GSP in particular lined up for July. Because really, I don't know what else they're going to go with.
Let's play with some theoreticals here. Let's say George St. Pierre comes back and fights Robbie Lawler for the welterweight title.
Yep.
Let's say Conor McGregor beats Rafael Dos Anjos. He's lightweight champion and featherweight champion. He again has any number of options available to him. If you have GSP on this card, it's probably still going to be the co-main event under Conor McGregor at the level McGregor is at right now.
Especially if he's a dual-weight champion.
If that's the case, what fight sells the best for UFC 200? Is it Frankie Edgar? Is it Jose Aldo? Or is it McGregor against whomever the best lightweight contender is come July 9th?
Jeez, that's a good question. I mean, honestly, I don't know that it matters all that much. You know, I think it probably would be good to get him against a known quantity. I mean, obviously, they're not going to throw him in there with a nobody for a title shot.
Okay, throw the lightweight title out then. Frankie Edgar or Jose Aldo, which one is bigger?
I got to think Aldo is bigger. I would say it's a better, you know, of all the title rematches that we're seeing, that's the one that makes the most sense, and we're not getting it. So... to me, that's a bigger fight because you have the, you know, the intrigue of was this, you know, no one's going to call it a lucky punch, but is it going to be different if the fight lasts longer than 16 seconds? You know, I think there's that intrigue there. You know, the Edgar fight would still be big, but I think the Aldo fight would be bigger.
Yeah. Honestly, I agree with that, and I would hate for Frankie Edgar to get screwed out of another title fight.
Yes.
I really would. But at the same time, you would hate for Jose Aldo to get screwed out of a rematch when he was unbeaten for a decade and the only champion this division had ever had.
Yeah.
It's one of those situations where someone is going to get unjustly screwed over. And there's no getting around
that. There's no way around it. Yep.
There just isn't. There is not any way around it. Because both have equally compelling cases for that fight with McGregor, and both fights are still massively intriguing. Yes, the Aldo fight ended in 13 seconds, but it's still significantly intriguing because we want to know what happens if that punch doesn't land.
Yeah.
And we're only going to find out if a rematch happens. If it ends again in 15 seconds, okay, then right. then there's your answer. There is nothing more to that matchup.
Yeah.
I just don't see that ever happening.
Right.
Then again, we both thought that Jose Aldo was absolutely going to beat Conor McGregor in December. So what the do we know?
It's all true.
All right, I do want to preview Saturday's card, but let's backtrack a bit and talk about the fights that actually took place last weekend, because we'll have some fallout from that as well. UFC on Fox 18 hit the Prudential Center from Newark, New Jersey last Saturday, January 30th. Anthony Rumble Johnson just really, really, really demoralized and humbled Ryan Bader. I don't think that there was anything surprising about how this played out. I think that Bader, I really think his confidence got zapped immediately. Having that shot stuffed and then winding up on his back, it was only a matter of time, and that's exactly how it played out, because Johnson took his time with the grounded pound, eventually got his back, and put him out cold badly. Like, that was sprawled out, face down, unconscious. Ryan Bader, unfortunately, is never going to get a title fight in the UFC. Unfortunately for him, it's unfortunate for him because he had really earned it with the 5-fight winning streak, and should have gotten his shot with Cormier over Alexander Gustafsson, but clearly is not. He's a step below that level. I don't think there's anyone who would believe that Bader could hang with John Jones in a rematch. I don't think anyone thinks that he would actually do much against Daniel Cormier, but he had deserved a right to get that fight until Saturday night.
Yeah, this fight kind of showed further that there is the top three in the light heavyweight division, and then there's everybody else. And really, you could say
it's the top two. It's the top two, because I'm sorry, Anthony Johnson, I don't think, is beating Daniel Cormier, and he's not beating John Jones.
Right, but nobody else is beating Anthony Johnson.
Exactly, which is why it's the top two. Right. And then, you know, there's a significant step down to three, and then there's an even bigger step down to four and below.
Yeah, it's a multi-tiered division
right now.
Yeah, it is. It is. There's just not very many guys on the top two or three tiers. No. I mean, you've got the top two in, like you say, Jones and Cormier. Then you've got Anthony Johnson. Then you've got Alexander Gustafsson.
And really, if you want to take it this way, I think John Jones beats Daniel Cormier even more convincingly when they fight in April.
Oh yeah.
And so this is the wedding cake of divisions.
That is a great way to put it.
We have the small tippy top. Only one person is up there, and then, you know, it keeps going from there. Daniel Cormier is a step above everyone else that he's fought, except for John Jones. And I come across as a Daniel Cormier hater when we get into this, and I honestly don't care, because the fact of the matter is he's not John Jones, and he's not going to beat John Jones. And he didn't beat John Jones last year. And when he comes across trying to say, you know, he's the man, and that he actually, you know, absolutely 100% wholeheartedly deserves the belt around his waist, there's just a disconnect there between, you know, his statements and reality. I digress. He's still a level above Alexander Gustafsson and Anthony Johnson, and despite the fact that the Gustafsson fight was close. And I've gone off on another tangent here about Daniel Cormier, and I apologize, but the fact of the matter is, this division is extremely, extremely bottom heavy. There is one name at the top, and everyone else is competing just to be competitive.
Yeah, it's if that makes completely
sense.
Accurate. No, it's completely accurate, and it's, you know, the funny thing is about light heavyweight, you've got, you know, like you say, you got Jon Jones, you got Daniel Cormier, and Anthony Johnson is kind of the wild card there, because I, like you said, I don't see him beating Daniel Cormier or Jon Jones, but under the right circumstances, he can beat anybody. I mean, really, he caught Daniel Cormier with that one shot, and you know, if you don't have, the thing about Anthony Johnson is, if you can't take a big punch, or if you can't survive an initial onslaught, you're done, and you won't get away from him, because Anthony Johnson is like the ultimate puncher's chance. Like, a lot of times when you say puncher's chance with a guy, it just means, well, anybody can get lucky at any given time. But then it's Anthony Johnson, the puncher's chance is something a little bit different, because he's still good, you know. And the puncher's chance just means if he catches you and you can't, if you don't have a really good chin, he will beat you. And so, you know, like I said, I don't think he could beat Daniel Cormier or Jon Jones, especially given his propensity to crack after the first round or so. But that possibility does exist, I think, if he gets in the cage with either one of them. You know, it's the ultimate puncher's chance, I would say. You know, not necessarily the lucky punch chance, but if he does land, he's got a chance to beat anybody. Anyway, yeah, it's a weird division, man, because if the top guy is gone, it's pretty clear who the champion's going to be, and it's Daniel Cormier right now. If he's gone, again, it's pretty clear who the champ is probably going to be, and that'd be Anthony Johnson. And if he's gone, it's pretty clear who the champ would be, and it would be Alexander Gustafsson. And I don't know that there's anybody that's going to dispute that. You know, you've got those top four guys, and they're very clearly in their own tiers. You know?
Yeah,
and,
it's all fairly
it's very
firmly set. Yeah, it's all firmly set, yeah. in this field, and light heavyweight is mostly unique in that aspect, in that the challengers are clearly, you know, where they're supposed to be, and the champion is, you know, where he's supposed to be, as opposed to some others. There are some divisions where the champion is clearly head and shoulders above the rest, but everyone else is competitive, you know, and there are other divisions where, like, lightweight right now is kind of a revolving door. And, you know, Rafael Dos Anjos has looked great in his last two fights, but, you know, he's only a few fights removed from getting beat by Nurmagomedov, and he is a fighter who has been beaten several times throughout his career. So as good as he has looked, there are ways to beat him, and we could find things shifting and changing at lightweight depending on what happens with Conor McGregor as well. So light heavyweight's a little bit unique in that you can look at the top four right now and kind of clearly place them 1, 2, 3, 4. Everyone else is just in the field well below the rest of them.
Yeah. It's very unique. I don't know that I remember a division being that clearly slotted, before now. It's pretty unique.
Let's talk about a division that is, anything but clear. And that's the heavyweight field. Ben Rothwell Saturday night submits Josh Barnett.
Yeah.
He forced Josh Barnett to tap to a front choke.
To a front choke. Josh Barnett.
Josh freaking Barnett tapped out to a front choke.
Ben Rothwell.
Ben Rothwell is doing something special right now, and it's kind of a shame that the UFC is targeting the Miocic fight, because, you know, as good as the win was over Arlovsky, as much as his fight with Junior Dos Santos was close, man, Ben Rothwell is a more interesting fight right now.
Yeah, it's hard to dispute that. But the thing is, though, it's hard to say, like, either guy really deserves it more than the other, necessarily. At least hard for me to say it. You know, I think I like the Miocic fight just about as much as I like the Rothwell fight. But like you said, I think Rothwell is on a more interesting run right now, just because the things that have happened have been so unexpected. And you hate to see it, you hate to see him cool off before he gets a shot at a heavyweight title. And heavyweight is such a crazy division at all times that really anything could happen at any given time. So
the fact that he not only knocked out Alistair Overeem but choked out Josh Barnett, that's the thing that's sticking with me right now. And, you know, go back to his debut fight was against Cain Velasquez. His UFC debut fight was against Cain Velasquez. And, yeah, he lost that fight. He lost it by TKO as he was taking strikes, getting back to his feet. That was one of the weirdest stoppages I can remember. And I'm not saying the fight would necessarily be different, but it's, you know, 6.5 years later, and Cain Velasquez off the fight with Werdum and so many injuries is not what he once was. If they're going Werdum Miocic, you almost have to do Rothwell Velasquez.
Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer. I think it's a no-brainer that you go Rothwell Velasquez. I mean, what else is Cain going to do? He's not going to wait out a title shot, you know?
Deserve the title shot for this weekend.
Exactly, and that's the other half of it.
That fight shouldn't have been made to begin with.
Yeah, this is the original slotting that it should have been to begin with. You know, you put Rothwell in there with Velasquez to see if Velasquez can get back to the title shot, and you put Miocic in there with Werdum. I mean, that should have been made from the beginning.
Yeah. The main card Saturday also had a bantamweight fight between Jimmy Rivera and Yuri Alcantara that was given fight of the night kind of by default because there weren't any other really great fights on the card.
It definitely happened. It's definitely a thing that happened.
It did happen. I have vague memories of fast-forwarding through it on Sunday morning. No, it was not a bad fight. It's not what many fight-of-the-night level fights have been. The other big story out of the Fox card was the complete derailment of the Sage Northcutt hype train.
Hey, come on, the guy had strep. He was clearly impaired. Clearly,
that's a whole other issue. He came out this week saying, yeah, like you said, he you know, had strep and said he was taken to an emergency clinic by the UFC, apparently not knowing what urgent care is. apparently this is a thing that's only known to parents, Sean. You and I obviously have some concept of what urgent care is.
Yeah, and, I work for an urgent care company.
And apparently there are people who don't understand the concept and were freaking out about Northcutt. At the same time, if he was that bad, the UFC shouldn't have put him in there. He should not have been allowed to fight. The commission shouldn't have allowed it. The UFC shouldn't have allowed it. And illnesses can affect people. It's okay to not allow someone to fight when they are physically not capable of competing at their best.
When they're physically not capable of escaping an arm triangle from half guard.
I can't remember who made the distinction first on Twitter Saturday night, but there was something that I saw that I was the perfect view of this because Northcutt's hype train had come congruently with Paige Van Zandt's as well in the last year. And Van Zandt had her own hype train derailed a little bit when she got beat by Rose Namajunas in December. But there was such a massive difference between the two of them. Because despite a massive gulf of talent and skill level between what Rose Namajunas showed and what Paige Van Zandt showed in that fight, Van Zandt fought, scratched, clawed, did everything she could to stay in that fight as she was getting demolished.
Yeah.
Whereas Northcutt tapped to the setup of a submission. The only other time that I've seen anything close to this was Rick Story's guard arm triangle, but even that was essentially locked on.
Rick Story was squeezing the crap out of Brian Foster.
And Foster's arm was up above his head. There was no, you know, phone booth defense to that one at that point. This one wasn't even locked on as tightly as one would expect the setup to be. That's what really is the takeaway here, because it really seemed like Northcutt just completely gave up and didn't want to be in there anymore. That was the big difference. And honestly, you know what? That's okay. That is acceptable.
This is a 19-year-old kid who doesn't know what he's doing on the ground?
Absolutely. It's absolutely acceptable. But for how much hype there had been, for how much promotional attention he'd gotten, for how much he'd been paid by the UFC, the backlash was 100% justified and expected. Because, honest, and some of that's not on him. You know, the pay.
Most of it, I would say, is not.
Most of it's not on him. And really, it's okay. He's a 19-year-old kid. Losses are going to come. Hopefully he learns from this and finds a way to, you know, improve his instincts in that situation.
Yeah. This is one of those classic fights for young fighters where they get into a position where they haven't been – well, hopefully – I don't want to say he's never been in the position, because you would think that he had been in that position before in training.
I don't – but anyway, honestly, I don't think he had been.
But it didn't look like it. So – anyway, it's a classic fight that young fighters lose and then they learn from, you know. So this is
they also often do that in like their fifth fight in a bingo hall in Philadelphia. That's
because they were ACW.
That's pro wrestling. Sorry. Anyway, but no, it's in that environment. It's not getting paid $80,000 and appearing on network television when that happens.
Yes.
And good for him. Good for him at 19 years old.
Absolutely.
For getting the UFC to pay him 40 and 40.
100%.
That's fantastic for him. And honestly, any fighter complaining about him getting paid that should be trying to get their pay increased. He's getting paid, it's not necessarily an indictment of the fighters not getting paid that same level. What it is an indictment of them and their management for getting the UFC to pay them that level. Because, honestly, the fighters below them are signing those contracts. Yeah. They are not making the push for more, and they're not doing the things to get that promotional push. And some of that, you know, there's criticism to be levied towards the UFC over many things in this, but it's still on the other fighters who are upset about the way that Sage gets paid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you don't like it, then do something about it. Or, you know, it's at least when you get the chance. You know, Ben Henderson did something about it this time too. So,
and you know, we'll get to that here in just a little bit. Yes.
Yeah. And I will also say that in the aftermath of this whole Northcutt loss thing, I have grown to like Sage Northcutt even more because of the video he posted the next day. I thought that was tremendous. Spinning a basketball on his finger on a hoverboard and completely bricking the shot that he takes from the hoverboard while saying, you know, thanks for all your support, I'll be back. I love that so much. I thought it was tremendous.
Look, he's clearly a physically gifted, talented kid.
Yeah.
And there's something there. You can understand why the UFC put the promotional muscle behind him that they did. But that doesn't excuse the fact that he was not prepared for the position and they pushed him too far too fast and shouldn't have thrown him out there Saturday if he was indeed as sick as he claimed.
Yes.
On the rest of the card, I'm just going to run down results quick. You can comment on any of the fights that you would like to hear. Tarek Safadine beats Jake Ellenberger. Carlos Diego Ferreira defeated Olivier Aubin-Mercier. Rafael Nadal stopped Kevin Casey. Wilson Hayes beat Dustin Ortiz by decision. Alexander Yakovlev knocked out George Sullivan. Alex Caceres beat Massimo Fullen. Randy Brown, he of Looking for a Fight fame, so to speak, defeated Matt Dwyer. Damon Jackson beat Levon Makashvili. And Tony Martin gets a UFC win over Felipe Oliveri. The only one that I want to comment on is Martin. Happy to see him, pick up a win in that fashion, given some really brutal matchmaking on the part of the UFC for him coming in. He's been through quite the row of opponents between the losses he's had in the organization with Rashid Magomedov, Benil Dariush, and Leonardo Santos. So him getting a win is kind of a feel-good story here after some really, really, really rough bookings through the 2 years he's been with the UFC.
Yeah, he had a pretty rough go of it. I will bring up the Safadine and Ellenberger fight. This fight did not do as much to convince me that Ellenberger is shot as I thought it would. Like, I was not impressed with if I'm GSP, I am not impressed with that performance by Tarek Safadine. It was fine. He got the win and everything, but for a guy who it seemed like the book was out on Jake Ellenberger at this point, and Safadine just seemed to do very little in the fight, which was disappointing to me. I was also a little bit disappointed in Alvin Mercier. After his last few fights, I thought that he might look a little better in this fight, but didn't happen. He still looks like he could be a decent fighter, but against Carlos Diego Ferreira, I thought he might have put in a stronger performance. Not a whole lot going on in this card really outside of the top couple fights.
I think the thing with Safadine, to his defense, is the fact that he's had such issues with injury. This was his first fight in almost a year and a half.
Yeah,
so
that's fair.
There's a little bit of leeway there for him to come in and beat someone like Ellenberger the way that he did, which was still pretty convincing, despite the fact that, you didn't think Ellenberger looked that bad.
Yes, damning with faint praise, as Rich Hansen would say.
I mean, there's plenty of that to go around. This Saturday, UFC right back into action in Las Vegas, as we've discussed, was supposed to be a pay-per-view event, is no longer a pay-per-view event, and that's for the best. It's now simply a passable Fox Sports 1 card. It was never the greatest event. We've got a few really solid fights here on this main card, but nothing that screamed pay-per-view. This was going to be a card that didn't sell well on pay-per-view regardless, with the main event that we've, again, already discussed was not necessary in that heavyweight title rematch. So now we've got a five-round welterweight fight between Johnny Hendricks and Stephen Thompson, both of them top-end welterweights trying to make a play for the welterweight title. Hendricks, obviously, a former champion. Thompson trying to get himself to that level. We've got Roy Nelson versus Jared Rochalt, Ovin St. Preux versus Javier Cavalcante, Joseph Benavidez versus Zach Makovsky. There's a clear drop-off from there.
Yes.
But those were the fights originally scheduled for pay-per-view alongside that Verdum-Velasquez fight. Obviously, this is more than a passable Fox Sports 1 event. It would have been a completely unacceptable pay-per-view card, and the UFC clearly made the right decision pulling it to Fox Sports 1.
Yeah, no question. And even as such, I'm glad it's on Fox Sports 1. I really like the main event a lot. I'm glad it's going five rounds now. The next two fights down, Roy Nelson, Jared Rosholt, and Rafael Cavalcante versus Ovin St. Preux, those could get nasty as far as for staying awake purposes. Especially Nelson Rosholt. If that doesn't end in the first minute or so, it's going to go all 15. This is not going to be very good.
I have higher hopes for OSP Feijão simply because I think Feijão's shot and he's going to get hurt badly, but that's me.
There is that possibility, that's for sure. There's also the possibility that OSP can't do anything to him.
I think that one's a lot slighter of a possibility than the former. But
fair enough.
Hendricks Thompson is an interesting fight.
I shouldn't say can't do anything. I should say won't do anything to him.
Hendricks Thompson is an interesting fight. I, you know, we talked about this before because when it was announced, it came right after Damian Maia's last win, and a lot of us were calling for Damian Maia against Johnny Hendricks. And I still think that would have been a more, I think that would have been a really good fight and a really challenging fight for both of them. I'm really worried about Stephen Thompson just getting ground out for 25 minutes.
Yeah, there is that possibility. I kind of like Stephen Thompson's chances in this fight.
I absolutely do. I just, it really seems to me the type of fight where if Hendricks comes in serious about the weight cut this time around and has no issues, which by all accounts he's not going to this week, then he's got the type of skill set to completely neuter what Stephen Thompson does best.
This is true. You know, if he gets the takedown, if he doesn't have any problem getting takedowns, then Thompson is definitely going to be in for a long night. And so are we probably.
Now he did say that, you know, Hendricks did say, you know, everyone who said they were a better striker than me, I've beaten, and said that he was going to that he's beaten them on the feet. You know, some selective memory over how he won fights against Carlos Condit and Robbie Lawler, but still,
Hey, you know, if he wants to try and stand with Stephen Thompson, go ahead, man. But I don't think it's a good idea. You know,
it's a bad idea. It's a really bad idea.
I mean, especially given Hendricks' propensity to not deal all that well with adversity. I mean, I'm not going to say he quits because I don't feel like he does, but he's not Robbie Lawler when it comes to dealing with adversity. He tends to slow down and get kind of deliberate. And, you know, if Stephen Thompson can put him in trouble early, that could be, you know, even if he doesn't finish him in the first round, which I don't see happening, if it's not an early finish, it could still, you know, if he runs into that adversity early in the fight, that could be a bad thing for him, you know, and it kind of depends on how things shake out, obviously. It's a tough fight to really predict because you don't know which Johnny Hendricks you're going to get. And you don't know how Stephen Thompson is going to be able to deal with Hendricks' takedowns. You know, he's fought guys with decent takedowns, probably nobody on the level of Johnny Hendricks, when it comes to that, but I don't know, man. I get the feeling that Stephen Thompson could acquit himself really well in this fight.
I mean, honestly, Thompson's only loss in his combat sports history is a 3-round decision to Matt Brown.
Yeah, and was before we knew that Matt Brown is Matt Brown.
It's not even that bad of a loss. It wasn't. It's just one of those that was one of those fights that calls for more rounds. You know, there are a lot of fights that go 3 rounds where it, even when you have a loser, there's not much decisive about it.
Yeah, and that's also why I like that this fight is 5 rounds now. Yes. I think that's great.
It's absolutely great because 3 rounds was not good for Stephen Thompson.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beforehand. I think the real questions coming into this one are how long Hendricks can go, whether the weight cut has any effect on him, whether, you know, another 25-minute fight is something that he can go through, because honestly, he's faded a bit in a couple of them. Especially the last fight with Robbie Lawler when Lawler did not quit in the fifth round as he did in the first one. So I'm curious to see what we get from Johnny Hendricks here. And on the flip side, Hendricks himself has a ton to prove after the weight cutting debacle that canceled the fight with Tyron Woodley last October.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You know, that there's a redemption angle here for Hendricks. And he, more than any former champion, maybe outside of Anthony Pettis, has more to prove to get himself back into contention. I think him and Anthony Pettis as viable contenders who want to be fighting for a title again have the tallest hill to climb of anyone in that position right now.
Yeah, and it's funny because I to me those they are the two that fell the furthest too. I
Yes.
mean, you've got Johnny Hendricks who came in and I mean really in reality he won that fight against GSP, and then you know at the very least even if he hadn't even if he didn't win he gave GSP a better fight than anyone had in a long time. You know, came in there and did that with St. Pierre and then won that fight against Robbie Lawler, which was a tremendous fight. And then since then, it's just not been good. Even the win against Matt Brown was
That's why he
somewhat
didn't get
underwhelming.
his title fight, is
Yeah.
because of how bad that fight was.
Yeah, it's pretty underwhelming. And then you've got Anthony Pettis, who kind of the same thing. I mean, this guy who's coming up the ranks and can't be stopped other than a crazy loss to Clay Guida, which, you know, spoiler alert, tended to portended things to come. But, you know,
Yeah,
he comes
that Eddie
soaring.
Alvarez fight was really Guida
Oh yeah.
2.0.
Oh yeah, he
That's
absolutely was.
really disappointing.
I haven't always been
Yeah,
a big
and
chess
you know, he
fan.
comes in
That
there
makeup?
and just destroys Benson Henderson, you know, who had been picking up crazy decision after crazy decision, and since then it just hasn't been good for him. I mean, even the win against Gilbert Melendez, he was losing until he won, you know, so
Yeah.
it's like
Yeah.
you know,
I still disagree with that
If it
contention
wasn't for
because he
Well, I shouldn't
was
say he was losing it
completely.
clearly. It was
Bought luxury
competitive.
lazy boy comfort
Yeah.
and quality. Find great
It was
deals over
competitive.
at
You know,
Ryobi.
he wasn't
Southwest
going in there
Grocery.
and crushing
Get your
Gilbert
deals and
Melendez.
more, plus
You know,
special
Melendez was in the
financing.
fight.
Lazy
And
boy.
you know, obviously Melendez is a tough dude. But anyway, it's you know, those two really have fallen pretty far. I mean, you could see after those first couple fights when they were champion, it seemed like they could be champion for a while. And then since then, it hasn't been any good for him.
Co-main event, Roy Nelson still sticking around, fighting Jared Rochelt here.
I dread that fight. I dread it so much.
I don't know what Nelson has left, but Rochelt is not a fighter who
I want to watch.
really breeds any fear in
Is the anti-Anthony Johnson.
Unless you are really, really, really claustrophobic and just don't like tight spaces like that, I don't see what fear Rochelt brings in a fight. Like I said, I think OSP beats Feijão, but I also don't think Feijão has much to offer in 2016. Joseph Benavidez, Zach Mikowski is another fight which it's intriguing on some levels, but could really be bad.
Yeah, it's funny because when I first saw it, I was like, "Ooh, Joe Benavidez and Zach Mikowski, that could be a good fight." And then I was like, "Well, it's still
Probably.
Joseph Benavidez."
Honestly, I can't believe that this was ever a pay-per-view card, the way that
I
this
know.
is put together. I mean, and even the rest of this event is just one of the weaker ones on the schedule right now. It's almost UFC Fight Night Zagreb bad.
Oh, man.
That's coming up in April, and I think some of the fights on that card are going to be more entertaining than what we have here. Misha Sirkunov is probably going to beat up Alex Nicholson, and that might be entertaining. Mike Pyle, Sean Spencer, another one of those fights that could either be entertaining or devolve into complete garbage. That's the thing with a lot of these fights on this card. There's potential for
Yeah.
something violent and exciting, and then if that doesn't happen, it's going to be bad for 15 minutes.
Yes. Yeah, and that's the thing. It could be. There's not really a possibility for most of them to be great, but or at least on the surface. But there's the possibility of okay or terrible.
Like Josh Berkman, KJ Nunes. Nunes has been awful
Oh,
for
man.
quite some time, which is really surprising given the way he looked through Elite XC and even some of
Yeah.
his Strikeforce fights.
No, the guy fell off a cliff.
Berkman coming down to lightweight after a failed return at welterweight. Derek Lewis against Damian Grabowski could be kind of entertaining. But if Lewis fails to get the first round knockout and Grabowski fails to actually take him down and do anything, this is a clinch fest for 15 minutes, and that sucks.
Yep.
Ray Borg, Justin Scoggins is the bright light on this prelim card, and I hope it's as good as it could be.
Yeah.
But that's another one that could wind up just the two of their skill sets are such that they could negate one another entirely, and that could be awful.
It's very true, the things you say.
Noad Lahat has shown some potential, but he's fighting a tough Latin America competitor in Diego Rivas, who has no business being in the UFC. Speaking of no business being in the UFC.
Oh, the Mickey champion Gall, segues. Look at this.
Mickey Gall is fighting Mike Jackson, because apparently he doesn't want to go by Michael.
No.
For Gall's right to fight CM Punk in June.
Because Mike Jackson is probably too good.
Mike Jackson is a colleague of ours, Sean, and a photographer, and he's been a credentialed member of the media in Houston at UFC events.
Yeah. And he's probably too good to fight CM Punk if he wins.
this is the situation we are in. I give credit, and again, this is one of those situations where it's not meant to demean the fighters themselves. I give credit to Gall for having the gall to call out Punk when Dana White was in attendance. You know, that's the thing, is he took advantage of an opportunity, which led to a bigger opportunity, which might lead to another massive opportunity for him. And if he takes full advantage of it, all credit to him. The UFC can be absolutely shredded for the decision to put this type of fight on an event that is commanding the ticket prices they commanded in Las Vegas.
Now, at least it was the first fight of the night.
It's not the first fight of the night, because Artem Lobov is fighting Alex White in the opener on UFC Fight Pass.
All right. I will take your word for that.
Artem Lobov trying to ride that Conor McGregor train as long as he can. That's Saturday.
All?
That's happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is one of those cards that, until you really look at it fight by fight and see what the matchups are and what's actually happening, you might think on the surface is going to be a good, entertaining event.
Yeah, well, you know, the funny thing was, like, I hadn't really examined the card before the Velasquez and Verdum things happened, and I was like, oh, you know, Verdum, Velasquez, and Thompson Hendricks, that's pretty good. But then you look at the rest of what the main card was going to be, it's like, that's not good.
You look at it, and how are they ever going to charge $60 on pay-per-view for this?
Right, <That's>, right.
It's... All right, moving on.
Yes.
We talked about at the top of the show the main event changes happening, and the UFC's next fight night event after Saturday night is coming on February 21st from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Donald Cerrone moving up to welterweight for the first time. He was supposed to fight Tim Means, and Tim Means got pulled on Wednesday for a potential violation of the USADA anti-doping policy.
So depressed.
Means is proclaiming his innocence, says that he honestly does not know how the substance he supposedly tested positive for wound up in his system, believes there's either a lab error or a tainted supplement, and he's trying to get every test done that he possibly can. It's a really disappointing situation overall. And the replacement fight is one of those that just doesn't make any sense for Cerrone himself, and is very transparently the UFC picking something that they think they can market, because it's Donald Cowboy Cerrone against Alex Cowboy Oliveira. So the UFC could put Cowboy versus Cowboy on their poster. There's really no other reason for this fight to be happening.
And calling that a reason is kind of stretching it.
It's it makes sense for Oliveira to take advantage of an opportunity. Sure. Absolutely. He looked good against Piotr Hallman. He's had some highlights in the UFC. It's not like he's a bad fighter, but Cerrone's coming off of a title fight and is one of the longer tenured guys in the organization. There are so many more interesting fights for Donald Cerrone. But at the same time, Cerrone is not the kind of guy who really cares who's against him in the cage.
Also, isn't Oliveira a lightweight too? So, like, is he moving up to welterweight, or is it just for this fight, or what is that?
Well, it's funny because he is a lightweight, but two of his four fights in the UFC have come at welterweight because of short notice situations like this. In one of them, he choked out KJ Nunes. So, you know, there's that.
There is always that. Oh my gosh. Yeah, this might be
the
most underwhelming.
It's a complete mess.
First of all, there's some kind of conspiracy, because first you got my guy Yoel Romero testing positive, and then now you got my guy Tim Means testing positive. I feel like my guys are testing positive now, and I don't understand why that's happening. Next thing you know,
because you cheer cheaters, Sean.
Oh, obviously. Obviously. Next thing you know, Gabe Gonzaga is going to turn up positive, and then my whole world is just going to turn upside down. Then Eddie Alvarez, and you know, it's just going to be all over for me.
I mean, none of that would surprise me. There are very few guys in the sport where I would be legitimately surprised if anything popped up on their random drug tests.
That's a fair point.
It's Michael Bisping, maybe Tim Kennedy.
Yeah.
And
probably Cowboy Cerrone too.
Well, yeah. Well, except for the fact that he has failed a drug test before. So
that's true.
That's. But really, honestly, it's Bisping and Kennedy. And I don't know that there are many more that I would put on that list.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
That would legitimately shock me.
Yep.
And so I'm inclined to believe Tim Means on it being a supplement, because the supplement industry is completely
terrible,
insane,
corrupt,
and corrupt and unregulated and all of that. But USADA's response is going to be, well, we advise you not to use supplements because of that very reason.
Right.
You're using them at your own risk.
They're not wrong.
Because it doesn't matter what's on the label on supplements, because most of the time what's in them is absolutely nothing to do with what's on the label.
It's usually testosterone.
And that's and so it's such a their issue, you know?
It's a known issue. Everybody knows about it. So, you know, you use them at your own risk. It's just how it is.
And he says, Means says that he's been drug tested on these supplements before. Well, that's assuming that taking the same supplement many years in a row means that you're having the same supplement every time.
Exactly.
Because every bottle you get, every jar you get, every sample you get is not going to be the same thing, because you are using an unregulated product that is known to have all sorts of random things in them that should not be in them. So it's hard to have full sympathy. At the same time, you can believe that perhaps he didn't knowingly take anything, and it might suck that he could lose 2 years because of that. But it's a whole other issue about getting supplements out of sports entirely, and that's just not happening anytime soon.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What sucks.
Now we're looking at a card on February 21st with Cowboy vs. Cowboy, Derek Brunson in a co-main event against Juan Carnero, which actually is not a bad fight. But then Cody Garbrandt against John Lineker, and Dennis Bermudez against Tatsuya Kawajiri, and Brandon Thatch against Ciar Bahadurzada. James Krause against Shane Campbell. This is one of those. This is the opposite of Saturday's card.
Yes.
This is the opposite of Saturday's card, wherein it would be shocking if every single one of those fights turned out to be boring or dull or anything less than at least violent.
Yeah, Cody Garbrandt and John Lineker I like a lot. Brandon Thatch, Ciar Bahadurzada, is one of those fights that, like, you might look past it on the card, but man, that could be tremendous. Like, Bahadurzadeh, we haven't seen him in, like, forever. What's it been, like, 2 or 3 years almost?
Something like that.
Yeah, it's at least a couple years, I gotta think. And, you know, he looked... Well, you know, wasn't he the one that beat Paulo Thiago before we knew that Paulo Thiago was terrible?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so...
I think he started the Paulo Thiago bandwagon downhill.
Yes. He lit Paulo Thiago's bandwagon on fire and rolled downhill.
I think that's pretty much what happened, yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, I think he wasn't all that great after that, but Brandon Thatch is a ball of violence. So, you know, him fighting really anybody is going to be good. Tatsuya Kawajiri, they always get me with the name because, you know, I see his name and I get excited, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, it's not Pride. But it's still...
Yeah, but Kawajiri's actually not been bad in the UFC. That's the thing.
Yeah, but he hasn't been old Tatsuya Kawajiri, though.
You're asking too much to ask for old Tatsuya Kawajiri. And it depends on how old, because if you want to go just, you know, a few years old Tatsuya Kawajiri got destroyed by Gilbert Melendez in Strikeforce, so...
You're not lying. That's a very true thing. That's a true thing that happened. But still, you know, I like the fight a lot. You know, Dennis Bermudez is a fun guy to watch. And Tatsuya Kawajiri, even though he is not Pride Tatsuya Kawajiri, is still Tatsuya Kawajiri, and he's fun to watch. So it still should be good.
Yeah. I want to get to Benson Henderson, but I since we're on this, let's just go out to future fights, because the UFC has been building up, at least through reports, the next Fox event in April, and it's looking pretty damn solid right now. Tony Ferguson was initially going to return in March in a rematch of his one of his only UFC losses. It might be his only UFC loss to Michael Johnson. And instead, Johnson pulled out of that fight, and Ferguson moved to April to have a number one contender fight with Khabib Nurmagomedov, which Nurmagomedov says is going to be the 5-round main event on Fox. Hopefully it is, despite there being technically bigger names on this this card so far, because that's the fight most deserving of 5 rounds. But here's what we've also got, at least reported as of now. Rashad Evans against Shogun Hua. Michael Chiesa against Beneil Dariush. Besh Koheya against Raquel Pennington. Cub Swanson against Hakran Diaz. Tisha Torres against Rose Namajunas, and Lyoto Machida against Dan Henderson, and nobody cares about that fight because it sucked the first time.
Why are they making that fight again?
I have no idea. That's the one booking in the next several months that just makes absolutely no sense to me. That makes less sense to me than Cowboy versus Cowboy.
That's kind of mind-boggling. Yeah, so the what was I talking about? The Tony Ferguson? Tony Ferguson and...
distracted by the suckiness of Machida Henderson, too.
Yeah, I was kind of distracted by that. I mean, really, it's going to be Dan Henderson looking for the left hand the whole time, and Machida staying out of the way and throwing a couple of leg kicks from time to time. Anyway, Tony Ferguson and Nurmagomedov... are they going to wrap Nurmagomedov in bubble wrap between now and then so that it actually happens? I don't wonder if that's an option or if they're just going to trust that he's going to stay healthy. I don't know. But hopefully he does, and hopefully we get 5 rounds out of it, because that's a tremendous number one contender fight. And easily the best fight on that card, you know, from what you're telling me here.
I'm curious what the main card is going to be. If they have four main card fights on Fox, if they have Evan Shogun and Machida Henderson over some of these other fights, that's kind of a bummer, because...
It is, but there's no way those guys are fighting on the prelims.
I know, and that's the thing that messes with me, because Cub Swanson, Hakran Diaz, and Tisha Torres, Rose Namajunas especially, I want to see on the main card. But then Besh Koheya against Raquel Pennington is a really solid fight, and honestly, the toughest fight that Kohei has had outside of the Rousey loss, and at the same time, You know, if anyone deserves to go from pay-per-view main event to UFC Fight Pass headliner, it's Betch Kohea. but even Chiesa Dariush is a good fight. You know,
it's a good fight.
A lot of really interesting fights, and Leona Machida Dan Henderson is going to take a main card spot over several of them.
And it's just a bad fight. It's a bad fight. But yeah, I gotta think. You know, Evans Hua and Machida Henderson are gonna be on the main card, and you gotta put Swanson Diaz in the opener, don't you?
You would think, but yeah, I suppose they're probably gonna save Torres Namajunas for the Fox Sports 1 final bout.
Yeah.
Unless they go with prelims on Fox, which they've done a few times.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, because these fights are all worthy, you know? They're all pretty good fights.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do here, but it's definitely a solid card for sure, outside of the name-only fight of Machida Henderson.
Let's talk about Benson Henderson and the move he made this week that could very well have significant ramifications moving forward. After his win over Jorge Masvidal last November in South Korea, he was a free agent. He finished out his deal with the UFC. He had headlined 10 of his last 11 fights in the UFC.
Wow.
Three of them on Fox, three of them on pay-per-view. Benson Henderson put together I believe 11-3 mark overall in the UFC through 14 fights. He is now a Bellator rostered fighter. He signed with Bellator MMA this week, citing just a lot of intangibles to the offer, and as Dana White hinted, more upfront money than what the UFC had offered him. He did say that the UFC came with a strong offer. That's how he characterized it. Dana White said that there was significantly more money by a wide margin for him had he recaptured a UFC title, but that's assuming that they gave him a shot in the first place.
Yeah, come on.
So instead, Benson Henderson on a two-fight winning streak is one of the first... I'm trying to think if he's the first since Andre Arlovsky as a former champ to leave on a winning streak. I think he might be. And he enters Bellator in April, on April 22nd at Bellator 153, taking on Andrei Koroshkov for the Bellator Welterweight Championship. He says he's going to be switching weight classes between welterweight and lightweight, so we could have a potential Conor McGregor situation where we have a two-division champion in Henderson, and honestly, I would not put that past him because he immediately becomes probably the best fighter on Bellator's roster.
Yeah, no question. I can see this from both sides because Ben Henderson had a lot of value, I think, to the UFC in that he was dependable. He's not a guy who pulled out of a lot of fights. Like you said, he headlined a ton of fights in the UFC. He was one of those guys you can stick on Fox. He's a known quantity. People are going to tune in. Even if it's not like Tito Ortiz numbers necessarily, it's still, he was someone that people were willing to watch, especially since, you know, his last few fights when he moved to welterweight and kind of changed up his style a little bit. But I can also see how he was a little bit expendable too, because he's not a guy that is going to be challenging for a title anytime soon, if ever, quite honestly. You know, I think lightweight is a shark tank. And we already saw what he was capable of against the top of the division down there. Obviously, was champion for a few fights, but never really put together a string where he was dominant. You know, took some disputed decisions. You know, nothing wrong with that, but he certainly got the fortunate side of the judges from time to time. And at welterweight, you know, I just don't see Ben Henderson hanging around at the top of the welterweight division in the UFC. Bellator obviously is a different story, but you know, I can see why he would go with more money up front, obviously, because like you said, the back end money would be dependent on a title shot in the first place. You'd be silly to count on that kind of money on something that the UFC controls. So I think the deal makes sense really for everybody on a certain level. You know, if the UFC had their way, obviously they'd probably rather have him to fill in, you know, in events where they need a guy to headline a show, especially with the number of events they put on. But at the same time, you know, I can see why they would let him go too. So it's probably the best thing for everybody, and it's the best thing for everybody too, because if you're going to start seeing more guys wait till they get to free agency and then kind of get into, you know, even a small bidding war, you know, for these mid-tier guys, it's going to drive up their value. And that's good for everybody.
The only thing that I saw as an issue was Dana White's characterization of why they were willing to, you know, let him go. In saying, you know, he's a former champion, but he's now ranked 15th, and we're looking for guys on their way up, not on their way down. He's only 15th because he switched divisions, and some on the UFC's dubious rankings panel decided not to vote for him at lightweight. And so he might be the only fighter ranked into actual weight classes. Prior to this. So it's a complete mischaracterization of where Benson Henderson is at, because honestly, yeah, the loss to Rafael Dos Anjos looks better now that Dos Anjos has gone on to capture the title and dominate Donald Cerrone. The loss to Donald Cerrone in January, I don't know that he lost that fight. It was a questionable decision. At the same time, I don't know that he beat Josh Thompson. I don't know that he beat Frankie Edgar in the rematch. You know, there are those fights as well. Still, this is a guy who through 12 of his 14 fights was no lower than a co-main event for the UFC. He drew millions upon millions to Fox. He was a proverbial needle mover. And yet, they let him go. And in some respects, again, I'm with you. It might be the right move for them overall. It sends a sign that there is competition, but it is also a sign that the UFC is going to have to pay more money for more fighters that they want to keep, because there is money out there for these guys, and more of them, seeing what happened with Benson Henderson, are going to try to get paid. They're going to try to find their worth, and that's what needs to happen. It absolutely that's the good part about this, is it's a sign that it can happen, and it should happen. It's not going to be the case for everyone, and there are a lot of fighters who are going to try and fail in their attempts to get more than what the UFC would offer them. But for fighters like Henderson, who have some name value and who are in the position that he was in, it's absolutely worth finding out what they can get elsewhere.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. You know, I don't know that I would call it the right move for the UFC to let Henderson walk, but I get it. You know.
Yeah, I can understand it. I still think, in some ways, it's a misstep. In some ways, it can be considered a significant misstep. Because, you know, they want to consider themselves the elite of the elite, that they have the best of the best. And when you have someone as good as Henderson is, despite some of the losses he's had, to take him off of the roster and have him head up someone else is a sign that you don't have the best of the best then there. So it's also incumbent on, you know, Henderson following through and doing what he needs to do in Bellator, because if he beats Koroshkov, if he goes on and takes the title from Will Brooks, if he defends both off and on, you know, he could make himself a bigger deal than he is leaving. And that he said when he went into free agency that he wants to retire in the UFC and that he thinks he's going to retire in the UFC. So I don't think we've seen the last of him in the octagon, and it depends on what he does in the Bellator cage to come back as an even bigger deal when he does return to the UFC. however many years down the line.
Yep, that's about right.
Yeah. Anything else on UFC on Fox 18, Saturday's card, anything else that we've touched on tonight before we wrap up?
I don't think so.
God, you're boring, Sean.
I am boring tonight, aren't I?
It's all right. You're out of practice. This is your first show in like a month and a half. So you disappear.
I know. Show up out of nowhere like it was nothing.
It's quite all right. I think you went like a 2-year hiatus before you started doing it regularly again anyway. So wouldn't be the first time, Sean.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
I think that's our show for tonight. So I want to thank everyone for listening in. Hopefully we will be back next week to recap whatever happened on Saturday's card and to look ahead to another packed schedule in February and what is sure to be even more craziness throughout the next week, because that is the world of MMA on a week-to-week basis. Something always seems to happen. So, Sean, hopefully I will talk to you next week. And
yes,
we will continue moving forward in this craziness that is already the 2016 MMA schedule. So, for Sean Ennis, this is Jamie Pennick signing off.